Hi, welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Judy Nathans.
And I'm Robert Winters.
And we were just finishing up about the buskers and the conversation.
Yeah,
it went on quite a bit, and I guess it was that an unanimous vote? I forget. There was, they changed a lot of the language. They got rid of the fee.
So this is a street performers ordinance,
right?
Which has been in effect since, I think, early to mid-90s.
Right.
A good friend of mine was a street performer, and actually I had street performers living in my first floor apartment at one point. There was a group called Not the Beatles that used to play in Harvard Square, and Luke Hunsberger was sort of the main man, and he was my first floor tenant for a while, and a friend. He was actually my office mate for a while, too.
So I used to
hang around with a lot of these folks.
And each of them, if there was a group, they each had to get a permit?
So the thing is that I think you could, I believe that was how it was. You know, but I think most of the street performers were not there as a group, but I think all four of them had to individually have permits, right? of course, if somebody kind of sat in with the band on a given night, nobody was going to ask them for a permit,
right?
You know, and if you imagine that, say, hey, do you mind if I play harmonica with the group here tonight?
Again,
they say,
I'm
sorry,
do
you have a permit?
Yeah.
Well, I think, but the thing is that there's the intent of the law.
Right.
And the spirit of the law, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the letter of the law, right? So, you know, if the idea was simply to regulate volume of bands or the location or where they could or couldn't play, or, you know, to make sure they weren't kind of competing in an unfair way with each other, that's sort of what the street performers ordinance was really meant to regulate. It wasn't meant to regulate whether a guy playing harmonica would sit in with the band, right?
No.
So I don't think there was anybody from the Arts Council or the sound monitors who were ever going to raise an issue about anything.
When
like
you
that.
Say sound monitors, they're assigned to squares?
Yeah, I don't know whether they're still
are.
Well, the thing is that the street performers in Harvard Square are far, in my sense, is they're far fewer than they used to be.
And is that because of the fees?
I don't think it has anything to do with the fees.
Okay.
It has to do with the clientele. I mean, the thing is
that good point. Yeah.
Everything changed.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a day a lot of people would just go up to Harvard Square to hang out.
But wasn't there given the impression by some counters a while ago that it was our fees that were that was more inviting to go to Boston and Somerville?
I think that was never really true.
Yeah.
I mean, there have been a few characters. I won't name the names, but there were particular performers who were opposed to having the fees in the first place, or even the requirement that there be
a permit. Oh, that's crazy.
There were also some objections about whether if a person wanted to make artwork and sell it, could you do that?
Ah, good point.
So is that street performance or
they do that all the
sales?
Time around Harvard Square, the bus, the subway stop.
I see
people
sell
things.
I will confess ignorance here and say I don't exactly remember what the legality of whether you can sell your wares.
I guess unless
is.
Somebody complains, I don't know. It's a peddler. You're a peddler.
Right, but the thing is that you know, so you'd have to have some permit to do that.
Is there a peddler license? That name is so old school.
Yeah, they have some. They have some very kind of bizarre licensure requirements that if there's another place sell, like for example, if I wanted to set up a hot dog stand, they say, well, if there's a brick and mortar hot dog place,
you can't
within
sell it in your little
feet,
stand,
300
right?
feet,
yeah.
can
okay.
I do it? And they say, no, you can't.
Okay.
You know, so
that's interesting.
You know, I'm more of the New York Canal Street mindset, which basically says let's just have a free for all.
Yeah.
You
want to
sell stuff? Sell stuff. You know.
Well, you are. Well, then you wouldn't. Well, then then forget the permits. Have everybody
All right. But the thing is, if it becomes.
But the artists themselves are asking for the permits. They're saying it gives them protections, or at least.
It was actually Stephen Baird and others who really got the street performer's ordinance. It wasn't because of I don't think it had anything to do with the problems from the adjacent business owners who were bothered by the street performers. Though some were, I'm sure. But it was just more to sort of smooth things out among street performers.
Yeah.
So, and it worked well. I mean, it's been around 20 years, and I think for the most part it's been fine.
From 40 to 15 to nothing.
Is it
approved, or does it have to go now to, what was the result of the?
Well, they passed it to a second reading, so now.
So it goes to the ordinance.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't have to go back to the ordinance committee at all. So
second reading in front of who?
City Council.
So then you can have public comment about it.
Yeah, second reading is kind of it's funny.
Okay.
These
I didn't realize that.
In legislative language, these things can mean funny thing. So
second
reading, it's a requirement that to pass an ordinance, including a zoning ordinance, you must pass it to a second reading.
And then it
puts
goes
it in
to
the queue,
okay.
Sticks it onto unfinished business.
I see.
And then they can act on it just by either a majority vote for an ordinance or a supermajority vote, a two-thirds vote for a zoning change.
Okay.
And sometimes even a three-quarters vote, right? But you have to go through the second reading, which is kind of funny because in other legislatures, I think the Massachusetts state legislature, when you send something to the committee on third reading, that's called killing the bill.
Ha!
That's so if you send it, let's send it for a third reading.
Yeah,
meaning
we really don't
want this. Never look at this again.
Okay, well that's interesting.
The last thing you wanted in the state legislature is to be sent to for third reading.
Well, I confess I did not look at the whole language thing. Did you?
No.
But there was something about fires, and I guess Quentin Zondervan objected to that.
Yeah.
Which I thought was
I mean, if
really
you had somebody
strange.
Who would juggle torches or something like that.
I'm sorry. I don't want open fires. I mean,
yeah.
I was thinking, I kept thinking of California, really?
I mean,
are we objecting to that?
We're showing some appropriate caution. I mean,
Hello?
The thing is unless if the person who was not the most skilled juggler and they were juggling torches and then there was somebody with a foofy dress nearby.
But we are lucky we're living in this environment.
Right.
What if we're living in a very, it didn't rain for like
right.
5 months. You know, I
right.
just feel
but,
like that's just such
is,
a minor thing.
The mistakes could happen and you could light somebody's clothing up on fire
or
whatever.
A little kid could,
so.
Who knows.
So I don't know.
That's so, to me.
Yeah. I mean, it's a small part of it all, but, you know, it's like.
I mean, the one thing I agree with, eliminating the fee would eliminate, there was a whole thing about homeless. I don't know how many homeless people acquire or want to do open anything,
I think,
but
some city councilors, one in particular, is showing a certain predilection for micromanagement.
And
so, in other words, if the Arts Council representatives have worked it out with the artists community to sort of, and they've come to some understanding about what could or should be regulated, it is a little weird when in the end the city council comes in and says, well, how do you feel about the use of fire? Well, you know, they already worked out that out, you know. And
I they don't say the use of it. They objected to the fact that it wasn't allowed. That's what I heard.
Right.
But
the thing is, you know,
and then the homeless thing.
Right.
But about, I think that was in the language, wasn't it? Homeless?
I think it is, yes, yeah.
I
think this is one of the things that actually kicked off this latest revision is that there were certain individuals who they actually wanted to give a break to. And then, so they ended up lowering fees for everybody. Now, apparently,
all right, I'm
going to
bring up something very controversial here.
Uh-oh.
But I just realized this. Okay, so a homeless person is going out and doing some kind of act or something. But and even regular buskers, they do have usually a pot where you can put money, right?
Yeah.
So does that mean you could have a homeless person really that needs funds and is just going to have a harmonica?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then, okay. I'm just
throwing
it out there because I think that's sort of, it's very thin line here between,
it's true.
You know, asking for money and then,
When I was growing up in New York, in Queens, in Flushing, there was a guy named John Henry, I think his name was John Henry, but he played accordion and he was blind. And,
with the cup, the Seinfeld episode.
Yeah.
It was actually undercover, remember?
And I will say that, I'm going to tell you, this is like funny, like I'm going off on crazy tangents.
Yeah, go ahead.
Right?
I like crazy
tangents. But, so, you know, he was like a fixture on Roosevelt Avenue in Flushing, New York.
Yeah.
You know, the guy with the,
you
know, and you pass him by all the time. Sometimes you put some money in the cup or whatever, right, you know. And then my friend Alan was the last student of Reverend Gary Davis, who's one of the really great blues guitarists. And really looked up to Gary Davis and played really beautifully, just like Gary Davis.
Uh-huh.
And we were good friends, so I'd go over to his house. He played blues guitar all the time. Right?
Yeah.
So one time he said, well, let's go. We're going to go to the South Bronx.
Wow.
To a kind of a crummy neighborhood, but there's a church
service. South Bronx.
Yeah, but it was a church service.
Yeah.
And I'm not a religious person.
Yeah.
But where Annie Davis, who's Gary Davis's wife, was running the service.
Mm-hmm.
So what she would do is she would invite people who played music to come to the service. So it was one of the most memorable days of my life. I went to the service in the South Bronx with Annie Davis and Alan and others.
And all these people that
there were people playing blues guitars and whatever. And it was incredible. I mean, just, you know, incredible. And then in the middle of it all, that fellow, the blind accordion player, was there from Flushing, New York, and really a memorable scene. All these coins he's gathering, dumps them all on the collection plate.
Oh.
It was incredible.
Wow.
It was just incredible.
Yeah.
You know, so I never passed him again without...
without giving something, yeah.
And also just looking with tremendous respect.
Yes.
For this gentleman.
I do think there's a certain dignity to... You get, like, the spare change vendors, I like that. Because then I take a paper, I like the paper, because they're selling something and they're not just...
Yeah.
Looking for a handout, yeah. And I think something. But so anyway,
yeah. I mean, but think about it. If you had a fellow like him who was out there playing accordion, and somebody from the Arts Council came by, which they never would do because they're good people, but say, "Excuse me, I need to see that permit."
Right.
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 You know, come on, cut him some slack.
So then there was the issue of the permit and requiring. I guess they got rid of the language about photo ID.
Yeah, I think so.
And
you know.
So that made me think about. Because Sumbul Siddiqui made some comment about how she loses her library card a lot and just keeps getting them, and we shouldn't charge. So I was just curious. I thought you needed a photo ID for the library card.
Yeah, there was this issue about
apparently you do. They make exceptions for homeless.
If you keep
homeless,
losing your permit, you know, do you have to pay a fee to get a replacement?
It seems to me you should get it free the first time. You keep then there was a whole question: shouldn't it be electronic? And that is they're aiming for that.
You know, even at college campuses, I think they start charging you a fee if you keep losing your ID card.
So I'm just curious, I don't want to get the library into any, because I'm sure they must have exceptions to their photo ID, but you do need a photo ID plus proof of address or something to get a library card.
Yeah.
And I called to make sure of that, because I saw it on the website. So I'm just saying, you know, sometimes you need to say who you are and somehow get some kind of, letter or something that kind of confirms who you are, which I think you can do, right?
Now, another thing that happened in this meeting, which was, or on the agenda, I guess it was sort of a topic of discussion, is that, I think it was in the summer. Was it in the summer when they had the thing that they were casting as the climate safety petition, zoning petition?
Oh,
better known as the Brown Nakagawa petition.
Oh, yeah,
and,
that was a little controversial.
And, you know, that petition actually had certain repercussions that might have made it hard to do renovations in
the housing authority
buildings. There were some other reasons why maybe it was jumped a little too fast. But of course some councilors think it can't be fast enough, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, it was not passed to a second reading, so it died.
Because
you can't simply refile it for another couple of years, even though some of the provisions certainly could be refiled and will be. But there was a promise made as part of an order from Councilor Toomey to ask that the city manager appoint a committee that would basically look at some of the provisions that were proposed together with some of the things the city was already in process doing, which were many and are many.
Yeah.
And then they would sort of basically come up with some recommendations.
And it would be a representative group.
It would have
from
to be
stakeholders, residents, whatever. Okay.
Right. You don't want to just sort of have the petitioners, you know, and then they basically say screw the businesses or whatever.
Yeah.
So so the city's practice is usually to bring in the stakeholders. So there was a committee of 25, including four city councils, which that's new to me. I've never seen that.
Well, even McGovern, I think, later said, Mark, maybe he was over, whatever.
Well, there's also kind of an oddity about that, too, apparently. You know, not to get into the weeds here too much, but the thing is the open meeting law it's like a straitjacket sometimes. And so that was, somebody says, well, the reason why we had four is that that's not a quorum of the city council. And then somebody, I think Councilor Devereaux said,
subcommittee.
You've got two members here on one of the subcommittees. That's a quorum of that subcommittee.
Yeah.
And they will be discussing matters that would otherwise. Okay, so even the city solicitor had to say, hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, right.
And in fact, if you look at the four, there were multiple violations of quorum rules.
Yeah.
I'm kind of the no whistle, no foul school of reasoning, which basically says if somebody doesn't come roaring in on a horse saying you're breaking the law, then just go ahead and do it.
Yeah, and it happens every day. I mean, not all groups adhere to this.
Yeah. So anyway, I think actually it was Quentin Zondervan actually came up with what I think might have been a good resolution, but I don't think they're doing it, but they might.
Which is
they could recast this whole committee as an ad hoc city council committee with those four members with these additional 21 members also as part of this ad hoc committee. Hmm. And this way, whenever they meet, they would simply advertise it as a meeting of the ad hoc committee of the city council.
And then you have to have public comment and all. See, that was brought up. It's like, how can you have a lot of, you don't necessarily
have to have public comment.
On a committee meeting?
You have to have an open meeting, but it doesn't necessarily
Oh, I thought you always have to allow that.
No, I mean, roundtable meetings of the city council are open meetings.
But that's different. Then you'd have to call it that. I don't know. I didn't pay a lot of attention, yeah. but there was discussion of that.
I mean, the thing is that public comment in Cambridge seems to be sort of our tradition. But if you go all around the state or the country, that's not always how it is.
But committee meetings, they generally have it at the end versus like a
right.
at the beginning, but I've never, but a roundtable, well, no, it's, but I've never seen one that did not have public comment.
Because it's written into the city council rules.
Oh, okay, all
but
right.
The city council doesn't have to write that into their rules
okay.
in another city. They could.
So
that.
Actually, so this could be open to the public, but you wouldn't be allowed
yeah.
comment.
Now, whether they will or will, I don't think that yeah. really matters. I think they were going to allow public comment anyway, but it would probably
right.
be at the end.
Sure.
Though
right.
it was
yeah,
kind
yeah.
of, it was a little curious when the mayor was saying, like, well, I don't think it would be a good thing to allow public comment. It'll slow down the work of the committee.
Well, he was comparing more to having a round table, which I
yeah.
sort of understand.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people to talk.
Well, I mean, the thing is
yeah.
that that's really where the role of the chair comes in. I mean,
yeah.
I serve on Envision Cambridge and these working committees, mm-hmm. whatever. If the chair is really just lax,
mm.
then anybody just pipes in can actually derail a meeting.
True.
So you sometimes you gotta whack a pretty good gavel sometimes
mm.
to say, no, I'm sorry, sir, but you'll have to wait until the appropriate time.
Uh-huh.
Right. So, you know, there are right ways, but it's really about how do you manage these appropriate processes.
Yeah.
So anyway, that became controversial. It was interesting on the Fresh Pond Residents Alliance, one of the petitioners, Michael Nakagawa, is actually appointed on the
right.
committee, and he says, he's looking at the appointments, and he says, I don't know if I even want to be part of this process, because
mm.
he didn't like the fact that it seemed to be stacked, the deck was stacked. I don't know if it is, honestly, I don't think it is.
Varied,
but
I
it
don't
seems
know.
It seems pretty varied. But, you know, these processes tend to work by consensus anyway. It's not
yeah.
a matter of, you know, well, we need to outnumber this faction, because when we vote on something, because most of these advisory committees, all of these advisory committees don't really vote, ever.
I know. We were on the recycling advisory committee. We did not have a vote.
Votes.
We just advised.
You know, you come to consensus.
Right.
Maybe you all agree to, like, issue a report or something
right.
like that.
Right. You can do that.
Make some recommendations.
But nothing's binding. You don't have
no,
a vote.
No, definitely not. So I think it's all much ado about nothing, mm. ultimately. Now, another item that was actually really significant, and it's not just in terms of the city council, was that there was a fatality on the McGrath Highway, the bridge,
right.
you know, the Craigie Bridge,
right.
where Museum Way meets it, which is the
Can you kind of physically tell me? I get confused about which direction everybody was going. So
okay, because it was misreported.
Okay, I'm at the Galleria going towards McGrath or whatever,
right? So
right?
If you come out from the Galleria and then you could make a right.
The museum is on my right.
So you go over the bridge.
I go over the bridge.
The museum's on your right. But
yeah.
on the left, there's a road that juts out, goes under the Green Line tracks. That goes to Museum. Museum Towers and Museum Way. All right? So, yeah, so it's right there. And it is the most hot. Local walks sometimes where we start it at the Galleria Mall and then we come up the back by the Museum of Science and then we cross right there. There's a push button and you do that. And I have to say, it is one of the single most hostile locations for pedestrians, cyclists, motor vehicle operators, anywhere.
Okay.
Honestly, the fact that they even operate the Museum of Science, which has lots of children and duck boats and everything.
Yeah.
And they're basically doing it in a space that sometimes feels like a breakdown lane on a highway. It's not really a good plan. And that bridge used to be a park. It was a road and a park, and then they built a museum.
I'm still confused. I am really confused about where we're located now.
It's on the downstream side, and the initial reports
downstream
basically
side.
Made it sound as though there was a dump truck coming from Boston toward Cambridge, stopped at Museum Way to make a right, and a cyclist in the same position to the right
also
of the truck
wanted to make a right.
Now, that's not true. What was true is they were coming out of Museum Way, at least this is how I understand it.
Uh-huh.
So they were facing toward the Museum of Science, And then they were both making a right to go toward Cambridge.
Oh, okay.
And I mean, Museum of Way is in Cambridge. Let's be clear about that.
Okay.
And the problem, you know, so there are multiple things here. First off, and you know, anybody who knows me or reads my ramblings knows I'm not a uniform believer in separated bicycling facilities.
Yeah.
Most of the implementations I've seen so far are sort of ridiculous. But there are some places where it makes total sense. So, for example, nobody's going to argue that it's not a good idea to have the Paul Dudley White bike path alongside Memorial Drive and Star Drive, because you wouldn't want bicyclists on those roads.
Right.
It's ridiculous. You definitely want a separated facility for that. And I think you can make a case in a number of other places where it makes some sense to do that. I'm actually inclined to believe that on River Street coming from the Pike towards Central
Square. I have to admit it. I mean, my daughter lives on River Street, but yeah, I mean, there's not that much parking in. There's no parking on the right side anyway.
Yeah.
It's not as wide as Western Ave. That's my only concern.
The problem is drivers haven't mentally slowed down yet. So
and
there
it is a major thoroughfare.
And there's just a little too much friction.
Yep.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this does not extend, in my view, to things like Brattle Street and Cambridge Street, whatever.
Or the smaller.
But the thing is that in some places it really makes sense.
Yeah. And
if you wanted to go down toward Jamaica Plain along the Jamaica Way, that's kind of crummy because you there's no way on earth you want to ride a bicycle on the Jamaica Way.
Right.
Right. So you need to have some facility, and it's actually pretty inadequate now.
Right. But at least it's there.
Well, maybe it is. Maybe it isn't.
Well, it's also.
So you basically choose different roads.
Yeah.
But coming over the bridge, the Craigie Bridge. That really needs something, you know, and there's no question about it. And you go over to the Boston side where all the roads are converging to that needs something too.
Yeah.
Right? It's just too many opportunities to get, you know,
it's very busy.
Destroyed there.
Yeah.
So,
it's unfortunate because the truck was stopped.
Right. So
the cyclist was stopped.
Well, that's the thing is that, you know, over and above, and again, please don't accuse me of victim blaming here. But, but the truth is that yes, do some of these improvements.
But if you have a truck
as a cyclist
around you,
you should just absolutely never,
totally vigilant,
ever be caught on the to the right of any big vehicle. Maybe a car can see you, right? But a big vehicle like a bus or a truck or a dump truck, whatever, that may be making it right, whether they're signaling or not. Assume they're making it right.
Yeah.
Just don't be there.
I mean, if they have the box thing that was brought up, maybe they could. I mean, it depends on the vehicle.
So if you could get in front of them, then they may see you.
That's what that green box.
But as we saw in the case of the Porter Square fatality, being in front of a large truck might actually be a place where they don't see you.
Well, that what came
up
at the urban freight
forum
thing, because certain trucks, but they're hopefully designing new trucks that you.
So I think Councillor Zondervan was particularly saying, like, well, we ought to require that any trucks that are going to operate in Cambridge must have side doors.
But he went to that urban freight forum too, and it was brought up that there's just certain things you can't do it. There's state and federal regulations.
I mean, to whatever degree you have any influence on anyone who's operating trucks in and around Cambridge to say, look, you really ought to be putting those side guards in
there. And we've done. The DPW has them now.
DPW does it. Some others, other vehicles are actually putting some on there.
Yeah.
There are also some other technologies, some sensors, so that you can actually detect, even if you can't see.
Yeah, and also designing
alarms
these windows now that are further.
Right.
They're not these big cabs in front, so you can really have your vision is better.
I'm sure in the next iteration of motor vehicles, including trucks, there will be, you know, you don't have to go all the way to driverless technologies to still have the sensors there to assist. So I think that the future is going to make it a
Well, you know what
better.
I learned from this forum, which I mean, I knew about the Volpe Transportation Center. I didn't realize it was research and development. I never thought about that. And that we have the guy that, one of the top guys that spoke at this, lives in Cambridge.
Yeah.
And all these ideas are coming. They're doing stuff for the country, and we have them right here in Cambridge.
Right. So some of these things, this is a lobbying issue, sort of like, you know, try and get the state and federal authorities to start requiring things, make that the rule, but that's going to take years.
Yeah.
The notion that you can basically sort of have a cop at the border of Cambridge saying, I'm sorry, sir, you can't drive that truck through Cambridge unless it has a side guard, is a pretty obvious violation of interstate commerce rules.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I think everybody should be just understand that.
Yeah.
But you know, over and above trying to do these infrastructure solutions, you know, it's still, the ultimate responsibility of personal safety still goes to the operator. Whether it's the pedestrian, you know, when you get told that when you were a little kid, don't forget to look both ways. Mm-hmm. Of course, the truth is, if you're crossing a street in a city setting, it's not enough to look both ways. Yep. You have to look left, you have to look right.
And then you signal.
And you have to look around.
Right,
because
but also,
it's the vehicle making a turn around.
At
you.
Night, I just wave my hand at any driver, make sure they see me crossing.
I look the drivers
exactly.
in the eye. I make very loud,
because
almost
I'm just,
comical hand signals.
Yeah, I mean, as a pedestrian, as a cyclist,
yes.
and as a driver, I
yeah.
am constantly terrified.
Right. So,
just,
so
you know,
yes,
just,
so cities and states can do things to make things better, but it still comes
attention.
Down to you as a pedestrian and a cyclist to understand.
Get
what
the earphones out.
Right.
Do not.
But what are
know,
the really dangerous things? And
yes.
for the most part, just riding parallel to a vehicle is usually not a problem.
But if it's
is,
much bigger than you.
Or much faster than you.
And faster than you,
so the differential speed becomes an issue.
Right.
You know, one of the reasons why I'm not the biggest fan of some of the cycling, the separated cycle tracks, is that it's not addressing the real problem, which is the real hazards at intersections.
It's inter-
And
exactly.
sometimes it can actually exacerbate some of those problems.
No, that's a good point.
You know, but you know, this has sort of almost turned to religion for some people. You know?
Yeah,
so you can't
you
even
know.
Talk to them, they just
I
think
know.
You're the bad guy. But anyway, it was a topic of discussion, and it's really important. And
I think there's
going to
be further discussed, I think, at a meeting between public safety and transportation. It might be a combined meeting next week, I believe, on the 28th.
Yeah, and so. I just sort of hope they can stay focused on the actual hazards rather than, you know, the separate agendas, you know.
Yeah.
Because there are some things that can be done, you
yep.
know, and that does include a little more education.
Yep.
You know.
Yep.
And again, I'm not a person who harangues cyclists, but, you know, I even last night walking to City Hall, I actually, a cyclist with no lights on.
Oh, I see that all
comes,
the time at night.
Comes up
yep.
here, and then
mm-hmm.
cars pulling out, and he just screams with resentment, but
yeah.
he was kind of in the wrong. So.
Yep.
Anyway.
All right. Next week, we're
see
here.
See you next
right?
week.
Yep.